The extortion and gang violence we've been talking about has compelled many Hondurans to flee the country towards the U.S. That means going through Guatemala and then Mexico.
Hondurans are among the most visible and the most vulnerable migrants on the migrant trail.
That's Noelle Brigden from Marquette University. She studies Central American migration, and she says that Honduras has a different migration history than other countries in the region. Guatemalans and Salvadorans began coming to the U.S. in the 80s as refugees from their respective civil wars. But Honduras didn't have a war. Honduran migration
begins en masse in 1998 following Hurricane Mitch, as you have people being pushed in the wake of an environmental disaster.
The water took everything, this woman says. Now we are staying in the streets.
Since their migration history is so recent, it means that Hondurans are the least experienced in making the dangerous way north through Mexico. Noel says that changes how they travel.
Hondurans are much more likely to use the Catholic shelters along the way than Salvadorans and Guatemalans. It's a sign of their desperation as they travel.
Migrant shelters are often found along the path of La Bestia, the freight train used by many Central Americans trying to reach the U.S. The shelters provide a safe place to rest, to eat and shower. Migrants tend to stay a day or two at each shelter, but the most vulnerable, such as women and children or injured, stay longer. For them, these modest shelters have become a temporary home. Maria Ines Zamudio takes us inside one shelter in Tenosique, a city just north of the Guatemalan border.
They run to catch a freight train that will take them closer to their dream. Central American migrants jump on top of La Bestia. Once they find a spot to sit, they cheer and they say goodbye to the friends they've made here in Tenosique. It's a scene that's repeated across Mexico. As the sun sets and the sound of the train fades into the distance, the migrant shelter quiets down.
La situación en Centroamérica.
That's priest Tomás González, who runs the shelter, which is funded by the Catholic Church. The situation in Central America is truly dramatic, he says. Human beings are suffering a great tragedy, and the traffic through Mexico has turned into hell, he says. Our commitment is to be here and help them, even if it's only to make their trip a little easier. The shelter is named La 72, or the 72. After the 72 Central American migrants who were killed and buried in a mass grave in northern Mexico in 2010. That painful history is reflected in a large mural hanging on the wall. It shows a map of the country highlighting the path of La Bestia and the shelters along the way. It also warns migrants about the dangers, showing which states are controlled by which drug cartels. For the cartels, migrants have become merchandise they can trade or sell to get whatever amount of money they want, Father Tomás says. There's a small infirmary in a courtyard here, with tables and a basketball court. The men sleep inside a church while their dorm is under construction. The women live in a modest room filled with gym mats where they sleep. Most stay indoors out of the unforgiving sun. Men are not allowed here. This is the only space where the women feel safe from the dangers of this journey. Jacinta, a mother of two, says she escaped her abusive husband in Honduras. Here in Tenosique, she's looking for work to finance the rest of her trip. She says she was fired from a job cooking and cleaning at a restaurant because she's black. The owner called me on the phone and said, Morena, I do want to have you here working with us, but the other employees don't, she says. I felt my heart tightening and I said, wow. But I said, okay, don't worry, and I walked away. But despite the setbacks these women face every day, somehow they manage to support each other and even help each other smile. Reina is a single mother traveling with her 12-year-old son. She sits on the concrete floor talking to the other women. She tells them that she wants to practice her English, but the only word she knows is yes. She uses this to describe the things she wants to buy in the U.S.
Oh, muchas cosas. Yes, una casa de dos plantas. Yes.
I want a lot of things, yes, she says. I want a two-story house, yes. I want a car, yes. I want a handsome husband, yes. I'll find him and make him marry me. The rest of the women laugh uncontrollably. And Reina mumbles, I think being here is driving me crazy. But Jacinta says it's crucial to keep a good sense of humor. Otherwise, the sadness takes over. It's not easy. I can joke around with the other women, but I also cry every day. It's not easy being here, she says. One woman, Mercedes, sits in the doorway listening. She doesn't cry every day, but it's clear she's been traumatized. She's razor thin, has bags under her eyes, and nervously chain smokes. She's friendly, but quiet. Painful memories haunt her. I go whole nights without sleeping, she says, because everything that's happened pops back into my head. I start thinking about how they killed my son, my sister-in-law, and how I witnessed my other sons getting killed. I'm scared. Mercedes doesn't like talking about the killings. It takes her days to decide to share her story with me. Even then, one evening, we have to talk in a nearby alley inside a car. She wants to hide in case she starts crying. Her nightmare started in 2008. When one of her three sons was killed during a robbery. A relative reported the killing to the police. The gang retaliated by killing the relative and kidnapping Mercedes' second son. He was killed when Mercedes couldn't pay his ransom. It took 6 months for Mercedes to find his body. Then, earlier this year, her youngest and last son was killed. The men who killed my other sons were there waiting for him, maybe four or five of them, she recalls. When we found him, my son was naked. They stole his shoes, they stole his pants, they stole his shirt and his boxers. They raped him. They smashed his head in with a rock. I couldn't recognize his face. When she picked up his body from the morgue, Mercedes pledged to avenge the death of all her sons. The gang assumed that she would report the homicide to the police and threatened her. My husband told me, I would rather see you leave us than to see you dead, she says. And my daughters told me to leave and to send back for them. Mercedes has requested temporary protective status from the Mexican government. That would allow her to take a bus to the Mexico-U.S. border, which is safer for migrants than traveling by freight train. In the meantime, she copes by keeping busy around the shelter, cooking and cleaning. She also has a soft spot for teenagers traveling alone. They laugh together as she smokes her cigarettes. I tell them that I don't have sons anymore and that I see my sons in them, she says. While we're talking, a teenage boy walks past our car and notices Mercedes' red, puffy eyes. He knows she's upset. Don't cry for me, mother. I'm right here, the boy tells her. She looks at him, pulls herself together, and laughs. For Latino USA, I am Marina Zamudio in Tenosique, Mexico.
Mercedes' application for temporary protective status was denied by the Mexican government. She left the shelter where she was staying. The priest that runs the shelter doesn't know where she's gone. For migrants like the women we just heard from, traveling through Mexico has become extremely dangerous. Here's Noelle Brigden from Marquette University once again.
Since 2005, there's been an explosion of organized and systemic criminal violence against migrants crossing Mexico.
Migrant rights groups in Mexico estimate that since 2006, anywhere between 70 and 100,000 Central Americans have disappeared in Mexico. Despite the risks of the journey, the number of Central Americans traveling through the country, especially Hondurans, has been climbing for the last 4 years. In 2013, the Mexican Immigration Institute counted more than 80,000 Central American migrants. And those are just the ones who got caught. Those who are caught in transit are almost always deported home. Now, in the U.S. If you're not at or near the border, an immigration hearing is required before you can be deported. But in Mexico, you're automatically deported if you're caught anywhere in the country. No trial, no nothing.
It's been a sort of unprecedented increase in the enforcement of immigration laws, so that you've had raids. There's also talk of improving the train infrastructure such that it becomes more difficult for migrants to get on the train. That includes erecting barriers and making sure that the train moves more quickly.
Last year, Mexico deported 32,000 Hondurans, almost as many as were deported by the U.S. last year. This summer, under pressure from the United States, Mexico made a plan that could mean even more deportations.
En México, estamos convencidos de que el fenómeno migratorio debe ser atendido desde una perspectiva regional, corresponsable y sobre todo humana, pero también...
In July, President Enrique Peña Nieto launched Plan Frontera Sur, a southern border security strategy. The plan will reportedly receive American funding through the Mérida Initiative, an anti-drug military aid package. It calls for tougher immigration controls, both at the border with Guatemala and beyond. A major part of the plan is about limiting access to La Bestia, the train traveling north. But Noel Brigden says the plan is flawed.
Despite the fact that this Plan Sur is being justified by the Mexican government as a sort of humanitarian intervention, there is a complete consensus among human rights activists that this is detrimental to the security of the migrants themselves.
Because of the changes of Plan Frontera Sur, a fraction of the migrants that used to ride La Bestia are able to ride it now. And that's changed the routes migrants are taking north.